Blog Talk Radio.
The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, struck him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball. It's Wednesday, August 20th, 2014. Welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable, brought to you by www.shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. I'm Bill Furman. I'll be your host again tonight, along with my partner, Jim Chet Chesko. Chet, week two of the Eagles preseason is complete. Game three coming up tomorrow night against the first home game against the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Little League World Series is in progress as we speak with Sports Illustrated cover girl Monet Davis going against Las Vegas at 7:30 tonight. And there are still the fighting Phils to talk about.
Bill, the Phillies have taken something of a backseat to a Little League team, but hey, what a feel-good story that is, those Caney Dragons from Philly. And yeah, plenty to talk about regarding those Eagles, too.
Well, most importantly, we'd like to welcome back Trenton Times Eagles beat writer Mark Eckel to the show. Mark will be the first person to make a return appearance to Chet Chesko's Rapid Fire Hot Seat.
Wow.
Get ready, Mark.
I feel honored. I'm honored.
Yeah. Yeah, Mark was our very first Rapid Fire victim. He did a great job, by the way, in his first go-round in the Rapid Fire hot seat. So we thought we'd bring him back for a return visit to see if that was a fluke or if he really got it. I have some good questions for you, Mark.
Okay, I'm ready. I'm ready. That's at the end, right?
We did it
at the end. Okay, good.
Yep.
All right, www.shopforkisses.org phone lines will be open at 929-477-2855. So feel free to call throughout the show. All opinions are welcome, but please be respectful of other people's opinions. Again, for those that might want to offer a comment but don't want to call, go to the Philly Press Box Facebook page and send a personal message, and we'll do our best to get your comment on the show. Well, Mark, welcome back. Let's talk some Eagles.
Sure, we want to know.
All right. Hey, Mark, the all-important third preseason game is tomorrow night, the Birds hosting the Steelers, as Bill mentioned. But before we talk about what's ahead, what are your impressions of the Eagles so far through training camp and two preseason games, a couple of penalty-filled losses, by the way?
Yeah, I'm not worried. I learned a long time ago not to put a lot, especially the first game and even the first two and the fourth, don't put a lot of stock or credence in what you see in preseason. Tomorrow night's game, that's the most interesting because the starters will play at least a half, maybe even into the third quarter. It's also going to be the first time tomorrow night that the Eagles offense, which hasn't been bad, but will have Jeremy Maclin, Riley Cooper, and LeSean McCoy all on the field at the same time.
Yeah, that's going to be something exciting to watch, I hope. We haven't seen Cooper at all yet. We saw Maclin a little bit. He was still hobbled a little bit, I guess, but the tight ends look good, certainly. The offense, I do want to see all of those guys working together, maybe see Sproles get a little more involved in the offense as well.
Yeah, I think, and again, I'm not worried about the offense even a little bit. The one worry I had, and I'm still a little shaky about it, is Alan Barbary starting at right tackle for the first four games. And I'm also concerned when Lane Johnson comes back, how good is he going to be after not playing for a month, and how much of a factor was whatever he was taking that he got, you know, suspended for, how much did that help him? So I'm a little concerned about right tackle. But the Eagles offense, I mean, between the talent they have on that side of the ball and the fact that Chip Kelly, I think, is an excellent play caller and his schemes and systems, I think, are very, very innovative, they're going to score points. If there's concerns this year, it's the same as last year, are they going to stop people from scoring points?
Yeah, I think we're going to have a lot of high-scoring games. What have you seen so far regarding the defense? Is it going to be better than last year? They did get better as the season went on last year, so what can we expect in 2014?
Yeah. I think, going in, I thought this defense is going to be much improved just because they have a year in the system. I mean, keep in mind, they transitioned from a 4-3 forever. You know, Kelly comes in with Bill Davis as his coordinator, and they split it to a 3-4, which I, a year ago, I didn't like the move. I didn't think they were built for a 3-4. I still, to be honest, I still don't think they are. But they're getting, they are transitioning. They are, guys are learning different roles. They made some picks now that fit a 3-4 more than guys that they had. But here's my major concern about the defense. I read, and I wrote this last Sunday. Three of their better players, Fletcher Cox, Vinnie Curry, and Brandon Boykin, really don't fit what they do. I think the Eagles are better on defense when they go to like a 4-2-5 or a 4-1-6, because they get Curry on. Curry's their best pass rusher on the team. He really is. I mean, he played last year. He played 26% of the snaps and was second on the team in sacks. So what does that tell you?
Yeah, I was going to ask you about him. I mean, go ahead.
Yeah, Mark, I just wanted to ask you, with this defense and understanding that you don't put a lot of credence on preseason, you know, but
right.
they've given up, what, 491 and 475 yards. It didn't matter who was on the field, first group down to fourth group, or who the other team's offense was on the field. We can't stop anybody. And to me, that's troubling. And the fact that we've given up seven points in 7 out of 8 quarters, regardless of who was on the field for either team, that's troubling to me too. And I agree with you about those three players. I just don't see this defense being any good. And I'm not an Eagle fan favorite a lot of times with these negative defensive comments, but I just don't see it.
Well, here's the thing. Like, if you want some solace, is that, again, in preseason, it's not only the people on the field, and Curtis Marsh isn't going to play a lot. He probably won't make the team. So Eagle fans can relax there that they're not, you know, Curtis Marsh isn't going to be able to get beat for touchdowns on a regular basis. They also don't game plan. Like, the Eagles didn't game plan for New England last week. They're really not game planning for Pittsburgh tomorrow night. So if you think Bill Davis and his staff are good coaches, when they game plan for Jacksonville opening day or the Colts the second week or the Redskins the third week, they'll be able to do more. I mean, if you trust them, that they're going to come up with different schemes and different defenses to match up with what the other team's offense does, they won't be as bad as they've looked when they're just out there playing straight-up vanilla defense.
But wouldn't you say the same kind of goes for the offensive side of the ball? I mean, it looked like Brady... Sure. Brady pretty much just came out. He was going to run the football, and the New England offensive line came out and punched the Eagles in the mouth, moved the ball on the ground, threw his little dink-dunk short passes, and moved up and down the field. And if not for a bad route by one of his reserves for the pick six, that, you know, New England
I agree. But, again, it's easier for an offense. Just like the Eagles' offense, they moved up and down the field against New England. I don't think New England's defense isn't going to look as bad as the Eagles made them look at times either, because they weren't game planning for the Eagles. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. Well, you're making me feel better.
If two teams just go on the field and play, the offense is going to have the edge because the offense is still running their plays, and you're just not. The defense isn't scheming to stop those certain plays. They're out there. They're looking to see who can play and who can't play, and then they're finding out a lot of guys can't play, I think. But, yeah, I mean, you should be concerned. If there's a concern of offense, defense, special teams, if I'm an Eagle fan, I'm most worried about the defense. Yeah, there's no doubt about that. I'm a little worried about special teams, too.
Yeah, Mark, the secondary was a big concern last year. The good news is Patrick Chung is gone, and they did bring in Malcolm Jenkins and Nolan Carroll. Is the secondary going to be better this year?
Well, it almost has to be, Chad. I mean, Malcolm, you know, they're making a big deal of Malcolm Jenkins, who I think is a good player. He's not a Pro Bowl player. He hasn't been a Pro Bowl player. I don't think he ever will be a Pro Bowl player. He's a good, solid, sit back, make the right calls, good leader. He's not a devastating hitter. He's not a Ryan Dawkins kind of player, and he's also not a, you know, get eight picks in a year either kind of guy. He's a good, solid. He's an upgrade over what they had. Let's say that. But I don't think he's a game changer by any means. I think he's a solid upgrade. Nolan Carroll's a guy that looked great the first couple of weeks. You know, in the OTAs he looked great. In the mini camps, first week. Now he's been hurt. Now he's going to play for the first time tomorrow night. And I expect him to play a lot because he needs to play a lot just to get some reps in. I think he's an upgrade. I think he may push – if he didn't get hurt, he may have been pushing Bradley Fletcher for that starting job outside. I really do. I really think that. Now he's behind, so I think Fletcher will win the starting job opening day. But as the season goes on, I expect to see Nolan Carroll playing more and more.
Hey, Mark, the Eagles made a couple of trades over the last 2 days. Yesterday
yeah,
they got
major
Kenyon Barner. No, not
yeah.
blockbusters. Kenyon Barner for a right. seventh-round pick. He's a running back and return guy. And then today they got a kicker, Cody Parker, in exchange for running back David Flewellen from the Colts. Is this just an indication that they need a little more depth at running back and that Alex Henry does not yet have the job won as place kicker?
Yeah, I'll take the first one first. Getting Barner from Carolina, they're a little concerned. Josh Huff, who was penciled in as their kick returner and brought one back for a touchdown in the opening preseason game against the Bears, is out with a shoulder injury. They're saying he said the other day, he told the writers after practice that he hopes to be back when the season starts. Well, you know, he hopes to be back. That doesn't mean he's going to be back. And I think the Eagles are a little concerned with that. So this gives them an insurance policy on Huff not being back in time. And Chris Polk, the backup running back, has been hurt. He has a hamstring that has kept him out of action. And Kelly was pretty interesting talking about him the other day. I think Tuesday. Kelly was asked about Chris Polk, and he basically said, you know, he has his hamstring. It's not getting better. You know, we can't – if he tells us he can't go, we're not going to put him out there. So I don't know if that was like a subtle shot at Chris Polk or not, but I think they're concerned.
Yeah, maybe he's trying to prod him a little bit to say, hey, you better get healthy soon, man.
You can't make the club in the tub, is the old saying.
Exactly,
you know.
Yeah.
So Polk might be – I mean, and they like Polk. I mean, that's why they traded Bryce Brown.
Exactly,
draft
yeah.
because they Polk was going to be the backup to McCoy, and Sproles is going to be like a change of pace kind of guy. But if Polk is, I mean, and again, I would never, ever, ever, and I never have, questioned a player who says he's hurt. If Polk says his hamstrings bothered him, his hamstrings bothered him, you know. So I think Barner serves as an insurance policy at two different spots, at backup running back and at kick returner. Now, if both of those guys get healthy, and Barner doesn't make the team, then they don't owe Carolina anything.
Hmm. Now, how about Alex Henry and a kicker?
That's going to be in. I'll be honest. I don't know much about Cody Parker. He was at Auburn, kicked for Auburn last year, right? They were in the national championship game.
Yeah, and I think he was among the leaders in the nation in touchbacks, which is something that the Eagles have had a problem with last year.
Sure. Again, I think Alex Henry I'm not as down on Alex Henry as the rest of the world, but he needs competition. He needs someone. They can't, like last year, I thought a big mistake last year was handing him the job. I mean, they didn't bring a kicker in. They just said, okay, you're our kicker. And
right.
I use the comparison because it's so, I think it's such a great comparison. Green Bay last year had Mason Crosby's been Green Bay's kicker for I don't know how many years now. Similar to Alex Henry, you know, a draft pick, not a guy that, you know, like a mid-round pick, pretty good when he first got there, had a terrible year 2 years ago. Green Bay brought in like 100 kickers last year. They bring one in, Crosby would beat him out. So they would cut that guy. They bring another one in, he'd beat him out. They must have brought in, I mean, how many, every other week they had a different kicker in challenging Crosby. But guess what? It made Crosby better, and he didn't go to the Pro Bowl, but he had a borderline Pro Bowl year last year for Green Bay. I think Henry is the same kind of thing here. They brought in that Carey Spear murder leg. He was terrible. I mean, that wasn't even that was a joke that they brought that guy in. He wasn't any good. I'm assuming he's getting cut. I don't think they're going to keep three kickers. Now, Parker's in. Now, Parker's going to challenge Henry. If Parker's better, they're going to keep Parker. But I think the competition will just make Henry better. If he doesn't respond, then we got a problem. Then the next guy in is going to win the job. But, someone asked me this earlier. Would they keep two kickers and let Parker just kick off because you're talking about his touchbacks? I don't know. I don't know if the Eagles are that deep enough that they can afford to keep two kickers. Maybe they can.
Hmm. I mean, Bill, I know you had a couple of questions.
Yeah, well, let me tag right on to you for one that wasn't one I was thinking of, but you just led me to it. The Josh Huff injury and Lane Johnson being out, you spoke a little bit about the depth on the offensive line, but how do you see the depth overall now with the loss of Huff? I'm sure – I don't know where he was going to be on the depth chart, but
– not very high.
How do you see that being a roster move for them? Who's going to make the squad out there?
At wide receiver? Well, Huff will still make it. Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine he's going to be out for the year. I think they'll keep six receivers. I mean, obviously, you got, you know, Cooper, Macklin, and Matthews are your top three. It looks like Brad Smith is going to be four. He's been getting most of the reps, although he's not going to play tomorrow night, but it's not a serious injury. Huff was penciled in as number five, and then I think there's a battle for six between Jeff Mail, MoMA, I don't know who else you want to throw in that mix, some other guys. And that's if they keep six, and I think they will keep six. So if they keep Huff and he's hurt, he won't be active on game day until he's ready. I think losing Huff as a receiver, I don't think was going to get a lot of time early, but I think he was going to be your number one kick returner. So that's why I think Barner's here now to take that, you know, if he is a kick returner. And he also knows Kelly's offense. Basically, I mean, Kelly's offense isn't that different from what he ran at Oregon. So Barner's a guy that can come in, you know, and with halfway through preseason and know the offense more so than if they picked up a guy that, you know, went to Notre Dame or USC.
Right, right. Well, as far as the roster itself, do you see any real surprises anywhere along the list that you wouldn't have thought of when we talked back at draft time?
Let me try to think. Not really. You mean like a surprise guy making the team or a surprise guy getting cut?
Well, one of the names I've seen bounced around that people were thinking is on the outs is the Damian Square up front, that he seems to be an odd man. Does that sound right?
Well, I like him. It depends how deep they go on the defensive line, because Bo Allen, when I said earlier about they drafted guys to fit a 3-4, well, Bo Allen is a 3-4 nose tackle. He is what a 3-4 nose tackle looks like. He's 6'1", 6'2", about 330. He's a big body to put in the middle. Damian Square is kind of undersized. But he does a lot of good things for you. He can play a couple positions. Could they cut him? Yeah, I mean, would that be a gigantic cut? He was undrafted guy last year that made the team as a surprise. If he got cut this year, I wouldn't be shocked. I mean, it depends on how many I would think he's the seventh defensive lineman right now. I mean, I think you got your starting three, Logan, Thornton, and Cox. Then you have Curry, Bo Allen, and then other end spots up for the air. I mean, that could be Taylor Hart, the rookie. That's wide open as well. So if they only keep six, I think Damian Square's out. And I think he'll get picked up probably by a 4-3 team that would use him as an inside, an inside guy in a 4-3. He's not a bad player.
Hey,
he's also the guy that blocked the field goal against the Bears, or blocked the extra point against the Bears the first week.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned Vinny Curry twice now. A lot of fans, Mark, even a bunch of media folks, believe the Eagles' best pure pass rusher, and said it too, is Vinny Curry. Why is this coaching staff hesitant to play him, or is it just the fact that it's mostly a 3-4?
Yeah, he's really not that good in a 3-4, to be honest with you, because he's not big enough.
Yeah.
He's a 4-3 right defensive end. He's Hugh Douglas is who he is. Maybe not quite.
Okay.
Maybe that. I mean, Hugh was pretty. I shouldn't downplay Hugh Douglas. Hugh Douglas was a great player, Pro Bowl player. But Hugh Douglas couldn't play in a 3-4. That's why the Jets traded him to the Eagles when they went to a 3-4. I mean, Vinny Curry is a 4-3. Go get the quarterback. He's not a great run stopper. He's trying to get better at it, but that's not what he is. I mean, he's a guy you line him up, over the left tackle, and let him go get the quarterback. So when they go to a fourth man front on third, on third downs, or when hopefully if they're ahead late in the game and the team's going to have to throw the ball a lot in the fourth quarter, you can have Vinny Curry out there. And keep in mind, now he was drafted by Andy Reid when they were still playing a 4-3. So
right.
he would have fit in well there, mm-hmm. I think. Yeah, but he's just not. I mean, 3-4 ends are look like Cedric Thornton. They're 300 pounds, and they're big run stopping guys that hold the point and let the linebackers come up and make the plays. I would almost be tempted, and I don't know if he could do this, but have Vinnie Curry lose a couple pounds and make him a 3-4 linebacker.
Not a bad idea.
Good.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if he can do that. He might. I mean, it's a totally that's you know Trent Cole. That's what they did with Trent Cole, basically.
Hey, Mark. Preseason games are sometimes tough to watch, and especially this year with all of the penalty flags. Ugh. They're not going to call that many penalties like that in the regular season, are they?
I hope not. But again, I mean, I don't think they're bad calls. I mean, they want the players to start playing by the rules, and the rules are for defensive. You can't have contact after 5 yards.
Yeah,
I mean that's a rule. It's like people keep saying that the new rules. No, they're not new. They're just enforcing them now. And they're enforcing them in the preseason with the hope that the players get the point and stop holding and grabbing and clutching the way a lot of defensive backs do in this league and get away with it. So
yeah, the networks aren't going to like it if the games go 3.5 hours though because of all the penalties. Yeah.
No, they're not. The networks and people, not me, but most people and most fans want scoring. They want offense.
That's true.
You know, mm-hmm. for your fantasy mm-hmm. leagues and stuff like that, you don't want 13-10. You want 38-35, right? I mean, and the way to do that is to let the offenses have the advantages, and that's what they're trying to – that's what this is all about. This is about giving the wide receivers an advantage over defense backs.
Yeah, right. And it's – you know, I'm an old dinosaur. I'll go with that 24-17 bloodbath rather than
41-38
with all the dancing wide receivers.
I want a good game. If it's you know, don't get me wrong. I've enjoyed some 38-35 games, but I've enjoyed some 13-10 games. I remember back in the Buddy Ryan era when that Eagle defense was just fun to watch. I mean that was I liked it better when the other team had the ball. It was fun watching Seth Joyner and Reggie White and Eric Allen and Clyde Simmons and Jerome Brown, and I can go on Eric Allen, Wes Hopkins. Those guys, I liked watching them more than the offense.
Yep. Bill, you want to ask Mark about Nick Foles?
I have one more big question for you, Mark.
Sure, go ahead.
And this may be the, I don't know, $10 million, $20 million, $30 million question.
Uh-oh.
Why would you see that the Eagles have been reluctant to not make a long-term deal with Nick Foles?
Well, they can't until I don't know what the date is. It's a certain time that they can. They will.
This year, though?
No doubt in my mind they will.
Okay.
Foles is going to be here forever. I mean, he'll be here for forever. I mean, I think his next deal will be it'll be similar to the ones you've seen for Kaepernick and Andy Dalton and all that. Yeah, but they can't sign him until – you can't do a long-term deal with a guy now until after, what is it, third year. So this is Nick's third year now. So they can't do anything with him until the end of the season. And
I thought the Niners did that with Kaepernick. I thought they jumped ahead of that rule. No?
No, you can't jump ahead of the rule.
Okay, I thought they did.
Well, you're in the top 10.
Excuse me?
Is Foles in the top 10 in the league now in quarterbacking, do you think?
You know what? Somebody asked me that before, and I did it off the top of my head, and I had him 11.
Okay. That sounds about right.
That's pretty
again,
cool.
This is a key year, I think.
Based off last – I mean, if we're just talking about last year –
Oh, yeah, of course.
I mean, but I want to see him – and again, I mean, how do you – I mean, it's so up to the person doing a list. When you do a list of your top 10 quarterbacks, are we talking about – today? Are we talking about what they've done? I mean, if you're asking me who's better, Eli Manning or Nick Foles, well, I have to say Eli Manning's had a better career. The guy's won 2 Super Bowls. Nick Foles hasn't won a playoff game. So from that
right now, what would you say?
But today, if you're asking me, I'm starting a team and I could have either guy, I want Nick Foles.
All right. There you go.
But I guess it's all subjective based on when you're ranked, what's your criteria? Career? Or today? Today,
hey, Bill,
Nick
I think
Foles...
it's about that time.
Oh, let's go. I'm ready.
Oh, it is. It's 7:24. It's 7:24, and Mark, good luck. He's been priming up for you for a week.
All right, here we go.
All right. All right. Mark Eccles, some history in the making tonight as you are, again, our very first returnee to the Chesko Rapid Fire Hot Seat. You did so well the first time, we thought we'd have you do it again. Now, for those of you listening at home, keep in mind this is for entertainment purpose only, so no wagering connected with Mr. Eccles' responses. All right, Mark, when we talked with you back in May, your projection was that the Eagles would have another 10-6 season. Has anything you've seen the last few weeks changed that viewpoint?
Not at all. I still have them 10-6.
Who's the biggest threat to the Eagles atop the NFC East?
Nobody. Themselves. They can only beat themselves. The rest of the division.
The Eagles' defense last year was ranked 29th in the league, dead last, 32nd in terms of passing yards. What's the outlook for this season as far as the defense?
You want a number where they're going to be ranked? Is that what you're asking me?
Yeah, how high?
Top 20 overall.
We'll take that. Which, if any, Eagles defenders could be potential Pro Bowl players this year? Defense.
Fletcher Cox, Michael Kendricks.
All right. How concerned should we be about the Birds' aging offensive line?
I think next year, all things being equal, they should draft an offensive lineman in the first two rounds.
What's your view of the preseason experiment, Mark, with those 33-yard point after touchdowns?
It's stupid.
Hey, 2 weeks ago we had Fred Barnett in the hot seat, and he said this about why Eagles fans don't have fond recollections of his old boss, Rich Kotite. Quote, because Rich wasn't a head coach. He was a position coach, and he knows it. He shouldn't have been a head coach. What's Mark Eccles' take?
Oh, I mean, I don't know if you remember my battles with Rich Kotite, but yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Freddie, who I love, I couldn't agree more. Rich Kotite was a position coach and a pretty good one. I mean, Rich Kotite shouldn't have been head coach.
That's why I asked. I know you watch a little baseball too, Mark. Right now, the Phillies are on pace for 71 or 72 wins this season. What's the Phillies' long-term outlook?
Bleak. That team's going to be bad for a long time. They're stuck with these old guys that can't play anymore.
I think you're right. Will NFL announcers have the opportunity in the regular season to butcher the name Ifeanyi Momah like I just did?
No. Only if they're watching the practice.
You won't make it.
Only if they're doing practice squad highlights.
Speaking of announcers, what's your view of old number 5, Donovan McNabb, joining Dick Stockton in the booth for several Fox NFL games this season?
I'm very curious. Very curious to see how he – I mean, I'll say this about Donovan. He says things. He's not afraid to say things. And I'm surprised because he didn't say a whole lot as a player. Every once and again, he'd be interesting. But for the most part, he was kind of boring. As an announcer, he's not afraid to, you know, what he called the Jets thing garbage the other day and stuff. I hope Donovan does some games that I could watch.
All right. Now, we talked about this on the show. He's got some new competition now, so will Alex Henry still be the Eagles kicker in December?
Oh, that's a good question. In December, I thought you were going to say opening day, I would say absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
By December, I'm going to give him the vote of confidence and say yes. But
I hope you're right.
Don't bet on this, right? We're not betting on these things.
No. I hope he has a good season. Has the NFL, Mark, gone too far in the effort to protect quarterbacks and wide receivers?
Quarterbacks, no. You have to protect quarterbacks because that's people are going to see Aaron Rodgers and Peyton Manning and Drew Brees and Nick Foles, and you need those guys out there. That's why people are watching. That's why they're spending a lot of money. So you have to protect your quarterbacks. Wide receivers, they're a dime a dozen.
All right. If you were NFL commissioner, tell me one change you'd make.
I would find the way for Eagles to win a Super Bowl. one change I would make. Wow, you threw me off with that one. I wasn't prepared for that. I'd say raise my salary, but God, the guy makes what, $8-12 million a year or something. He's like, I can't do that.
Oh, as commissioner, yeah. We'll table that one for another time.
I would put a team back in Los Angeles. How's that?
There you go. I like that.
I take the Jacksonville Jaguars and put him in Los Angeles.
There you go. Mark, I know you're a Manziel guy, but which first-year quarterback, Johnny Football, Blake Bortles, Derek Carr, or Teddy Bridgewater, will have the best rookie season?
It won't be Bortles because he's on a really bad team. Won't be Carr. I'm going to Bridgewater.
I agree. Now, two more. Speaking of quarterbacks, who is the best quarterback of your lifetime since 1970, say?
Oh, thanks. My lifetime's only 70. That's good. Joe Montana. It's not even close.
All right. Now, it's August 20th, I know, but what is your Super Bowl 49 matchup? What's your prediction?
Green Bay, Indianapolis.
Wow. All right, you're prepared for that one. And one bonus question, Mark. Okay. One bonus question. You are a TV guy like me. So, Mark, with the Emmys coming up, what's the best sitcom of all time?
Of all time?
All time.
My favorite is Cheers. I got to go Cheers.
Interesting.
You go Seinfeld, right?
Yeah, I would go Seinfeld. Yeah, that's
I'm a Cheers guy. But Seinfeld's right there.
All right. Good enough.
Let me ask you,
Eckel, you've done it again.
What's the best current TV show right now?
For me, it's The Walking Dead.
Really? Okay.
Love it. Love the zombies.
All right.
Mark, you've done it again. You've survived the Chesco Rapid Fire Hot Seat.
It was tough.
Congratulations. Yeah.
Hey Mark, one question outside of the Rapid Fire, but what's your take, if you want to give us one, on the Washington Redskins and these announcers coming out saying they're not going to say their name? And I like Ditka's response saying, my God, there are far bigger things in the world.
I you know what? I'm not a big Mike Ditka fan. I mean, I kind of get a kick out of him sometimes, but I couldn't agree more. I mean, come on. They really are. I mean, especially in the world today, there's so much going on. They've been there. I mean, again, if I'm not a Native American, so I don't know if it's offensive or not. But it's been their name for forever. I mean, I could see an expansion. When we put the new team in Los Angeles like I want, if they can't be called the Redskins. Okay, fine. Because it's, all right, if that's going to bother somebody, call them something else. But the Redskins have been the Redskins forever. I mean, if they change the name, I wouldn't be upset, but I have bigger things to worry about.
Yeah, coincidentally, Mark, we asked Fred Barnett that question 2 weeks ago, and he just laughed. He laughed and said, who cares? He said, there are bigger things in the world.
Yeah, I mean, there's bigger things in football than that, I think.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and again, where do you stop? And then, you know, are the Cleveland Indians offensive or Atlanta Braves? Or we can go on and on, right?
Yeah, really, the tomahawk chop, come on, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Oh, well.
All right. Well, Mark, if you can hang on for one more second, we're going to have to thank our sponsor. I want to play the our Philly Press Box Radio audio clip while we still have you, since it's Eagles, and then we'll cut you loose. You have a minute?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Well, we'd like to thank our sponsor, shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. By logging on to the www.shopforkisses.org website, you can become connected to over 3,000 stores, including all the big ones you already shop at. Every purchase made gets you cash back, and each purchase benefits the Kisses for Kyle Foundation, which helps families dealing with childhood cancer throughout the Delaware Valley. If you have any questions, contact Bob Sullivan at bobsullivan.shopcom@gmail.com or give him a call at 484-319-8043. All right, Mark, you ready to listen in and chat? And let me give you this week's audio clip of the week and see if this is ever going to happen again at Lincoln Financial Field or anytime for the Eagles.
Fourth and goal. Hands off Johnny Bailey. Does he make it? No! No! The Eagles stop him. The goal line defense rises up and stops him at the one. A tremendous goal line stand by the Eagles defense.
Are we ever going to play defense again in Philadelphia or in the NFL?
No, I don't think so. I think those days are over. and I say that, you know, like we said earlier, I'm a defensive guy too. I don't mind 13-10. I really don't, as long as my team has 13.
Yeah.
That's right. I thought that was pretty good because they actually – I didn't want to play the whole thing because it was too long, but they actually stopped them three times at the one. But that just happened
to
be fourth down.
Right?
And I, what's that?
That was the Cardinals game.
Yeah, with Johnny Bailey. I think they gave him the ball all three times.
Well, no, they stopped him more than that, but they stopped him three times from the one, but they stopped him like eight times from inside the five.
Right.
Because
they kept getting penalties and moving it inches at a time and all that.
Right.
Yeah.
And the Eagles jumped off sides like three times. And they kept hitting the ball half the distance, and the Cardinals still couldn't get in.
Yep.
Always good to hear Merrill Reese, too.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Mark, it's been great having you. Join us again in the Philly Press Box Roundtable.
Anytime you need me, let me know.
And,
you know how to get a hold of me.
Yep,
we sure
appreciate you coming by.
No problem, guys. Take care.
Thanks, Mark.
All right, thanks, Mark.
All right.
Hey, Chet, it's always great having Mark on, don't you think?
He does a nice job. He knows his football too, and his television.
He does, and he's got the insight much more further than we do. We all do as fans who just watch on TV and read the papers. He knows the real deal.
Yeah, he does. He does. Good to have him.
All right. Yes, it is. All right. Well, just a reminder, our www.shopforkisses.org phone lines are open at 929-477-2855. So feel free to call throughout the show. Chet, there's a phenomenon going on in Philadelphia area and in Williamsport with the Teeny Dragon Mania and their pitcher, Monet Davis. What's going on? Tell me about it.
I have never heard of Taney, or never did until about 3 weeks ago. I didn't know what that was, but now we certainly know what Taney is, the Dragons, all these 12- and 13-year-old kids from Center City, Philadelphia. One of the best sports stories of the summer, especially considering the way the Phillies have played this year. Just one of those feel-good stories. I mean, it's the first time Philadelphia itself has had a team in the Little League World Series in Williamsport, so that's pretty exciting. And then just the way these, you know, kids are handling everything, they're being interviewed by, you know, Comcast, Sportsnet, ESPN, the New York Times, all the big guys. You know, Monet's on the cover of Sports Illustrated this week. It's just incredible. And I mean, she's got such poise for a kid who's 13. I mean, the fact that she's pitched two shutouts already is pretty impressive. But then the way she goes out and handles the media and all this crowd attention, like she's been a seasoned professional. So it's just been a lot of fun to watch. And I'll be honest, I hadn't watched much Little League Baseball over the last 5 years or so. I would tune into maybe the one championship game on that final Sunday. But as soon as, you know, I heard the Philly team was going to be in it, I've watched the last two games, and very exciting. She didn't even pitch the last one, but they still won in dramatic fashion. So it's a story that's really caught the whole region. Just a lot of excitement. Everybody's, like, really getting into it and cheering them on. You have all the pro athletes, baseball players, LeSean McCoy, NBA players tweeting about them. So it's really exciting to see. And they're just about ready to start, as a matter of fact, tonight's game against Vegas up in Williamsport, Pennsylvania. So we certainly wish Taney luck.
Yeah, how about the ESPN ratings? They had a boom the other night for game two of that. You know, game one, I guess, was a little under the radar maybe, but once they won game one, game two, they went crazy on the ESPN ratings. They've actually put it on the main ESPN channel tonight, I believe, instead of ESPN2 or one of those others.
Yeah, not a surprise. And, boy, it was an exciting game on Sunday evening for sure. The Taney team from Philly getting down, I guess it was 5-2, and then they were down 6-5 in the final inning, then rallied to win it in the bottom half of the sixth. I felt bad for the shortstop from Texas with that throwing error to end the game. What a shame to see a 12- or 13-year-old kid have to lose a game like that. But, you know, it's tough. You're in the national spotlight like that, everybody around the country watching, and it's got to be a lot of pressure. I mean, I would play in front of, you know, 20 people in my high school days, and I'd be nervous. And I can't imagine doing this when you're that age in front of a national audience, millions of people watching. So I wish them all the best. It would be great to see them win again tonight. Even if they lose, by the way, they get to play tomorrow in the loser bracket and could still advance. But don't want to have to do that. So they got Monet on the hill tonight, and we certainly wish them all the best.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, with the shortstop situation, I think any person that's ever been a father has to feel bad for that kid, you know.
Yeah.
It's not a matter of winning and losing the games. It's, you know, that's still your child or somebody's child, and you had to feel bad for him for sure.
Yeah, and their one pitcher was all teary-eyed an inning or two before that. I mean, it's tough, you know. It's tough to deal with when you're that age. So I give them so much credit for just not only the Philly team, but all these kids, just the way they're handling everything. But, yeah, especially the Philly kids, they sound like they've been getting interviewed, you know, for years. They know about things like, yeah, I got to bring my A game. You know, they're seasoned professionals in the way they're handling all these interviewers.
Yeah. Did you happen to see what Monet Davis's main goal is in her athletic career?
I know she wants to go to Connecticut, but
yeah,
I know she can also play other sports.
For the Huskies.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, and she certainly probably did. She's very athletic.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know what kind of player she is. I just saw an interview, and she wants to be a Husky.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
All right. Well, let's move along, and you're right. We do wish them well. Don't want to forget that as well. I would be remiss, though, if I didn't talk Phillies for just a minute with you, Chet. I need some opinions, and I know you have strong opinions about the Fightins, and are you ready?
All right. Bring it on, Bill.
Okay. They are 56-71. As you mentioned earlier, they're 127 games in, which means there are 35 left. To make my 72-90 prediction, they have to go 16-19. Are they capable of going 16-19?
Yeah, well, they're right on pace for that. I mean, they're on pace for, I think, 71.5 wins or something like that right now. So they could certainly go 16-19. I mean, heck, they just took 2 out of 3 from the Mariners on a day when Cole Hamels did not have his best stuff. 16-19 I think is doable. It's certainly not a guarantee. I'm not going to go out and bet $1,000 on it, but it's doable, and I think they're going to do it. I think they're going to finish right around what you and I both predicted this year, 72 wins. You said 72. I think I said 73.
There you go. I was going to mention about Hamels and the, you know, what a funny game baseball is. Here he's pitched so well night after night after night and come out with no decisions or losses. And today he definitely was not on his best game. He went 5 innings. He gave up 9 hits and 3 runs. But he gets a win. And now he's 7-6. It's a fickle game, baseball.
It is, and it's finally the first 7-game winner the Phillies have this year, so maybe they will have a double-digit winning pitcher. Hamels would certainly be the guy to probably do it. He is the leader now with 7 wins. You hope that he can get 3 wins over the next 6 weeks or whatever it is. So, it is a funny game, as you said. Phillies just have not scored a whole lot of runs for him this year. Today, he really labored through 5 innings. But he got the win, and so did the Phillies. So that's the bottom line. It's all about getting that W.
All right. I also wanted to ask your thoughts on Kenny Giles. He's now pitched in 28 games since he came up. So they've been working him. 29 in the third innings, 44 strikeouts, a 1.23 ERA. Obviously, I won't say he's been a surprise, but he's been great. Let's put it that way. Now, my question to you, moving forward as the general manager of the Fightins, you have Jonathan Papelbon, who's pitched in 52 games. He's got 30 saves. He's only blown 3 saves. He's got a 1.55 ERA himself. Are you keeping them both, or are you ready to pass the baton to Giles and send Papelbon down the road and make Giles your closer?
Well, it's going to be an interesting situation for the Phillies. I mean, I certainly think they want to unload Papelbon. I mean, he's been very good this year. Let's face facts and let's give him the credit. He's stayed focused. He's got the 30 saves again. He's had a lot of seasons like that. I think he had 29 last year. But they would certainly love to trade him and turn it over to the younger guys. But they're not just going to cut him. They're not just going to eat that salary. They're not going to give him away for nothing. So, I mean, if they can't find a taker for him, even if they're willing to pay half his salary or whatever, I think Papelbon will be back. But, I mean, I would love to see them turn it over to Kenny Giles. I mean, you mentioned he's got 44 strikeouts. He's faced 108 batters. Not 108 outs, 108 batters he's faced. He struck out 44 of them in the 28 games that he's been in. So, I mean, that's really impressive. The guy looks like he just doesn't get nervous, doesn't get worried. He just goes up there, throws strikes. And I think he's ready. I mean, you're sure he's going to have setbacks from time to time, but I'm personally ready to turn it over to him. I mean, even if they want to do it on a joint closer situation where you have him and Diekman, but I would move Papelbon as soon as possible. Maybe can do some kind of a waiver deal this month, but if not, get somebody to take him after the season and turn it over to Giles and Diekman, or just Giles.
The thing that I have found interesting for sure with Giles, but even with Papelbon, is Giles, you know, he came up, when he first came up, he was just coming up throwing gas, throwing 97, 99, 100 miles an hour. Now he's throwing that slider at 89, 91. It is just absolutely filthy, and they can't touch it.
Yeah. He's been really impressive, better than I certainly could have expected. I mean, I really thought he was going to be, you know, he was going to have some games where he would just get hit around, but that hasn't happened. He's given up one or two home runs, I guess, but the 1.23 ERA, he struck out the side a few times, including today. So he's been really, really impressive, and he's fun to watch. I mean, when you're there and you see him come in, it gets a little buzz going in the crowd because they know he's going to be throwing right around 100 miles an hour. He's probably going to get a couple of strikeouts, and he's fun to watch.
Well, the thing that most impressed me about Papelbon, and I would be hard-pressed to say when the season's over, as long as he doesn't melt down here in the end, that he might say, if he were asked, that this might be his most successful season. And here's why I think that. He has been a pitcher this year. Probably for the first time that I can remember, that gas he used to bring all the time is now 91, 93, maybe something like that. And he's throwing a lot more breaking balls, and he's mixing up his pitches, and he's actually having to pitch, and I think he's better. I think he's good.
Yeah, he's done really well this season. I mean, I'm really impressed with what he's done for them this year. So kudos to Jonathan Papelbon. I mean, he takes a lot of abuse from the fans when he's not pitching well, but he has pitched really well this year. So, you know, good for him. But I hope he's with another team next year, that being said.
Well, you know I like him, so I'm hoping they can figure out a way to keep him and win. All right, well, now I'm going to bring you to two big questions, because one, I know this is not your favorite. Well, neither one's your favorite topic, but what about my man, Ben Revere, in the hunt for a batting title?
I was going to bring that up if you didn't. Yeah, he's hitting .311 now. I guess he's within like 5 points or whatever of the leader. I mean, who would have thunk it, as they say? Boy, I mean, he takes so much heat. The guy is a decent hitter, though, but he's just basically a singles hitter, no power. And I'm okay with him offensively, though, as a singles hitter and a guy who's going to steal you 30-plus bases. The problem, though, is the fact that he's got to play defense, too, and he's got no arm. And defensively, he often takes a poor route to the ball. And you know that if a ball is hit in the gap and a guy's rounding second, he's going to go for home because Revere's not going to throw him out. He just doesn't have the arm. I mean, yeah, it's pretty impressive that he's contending for a batting title. I mean, I never would have expected that. But give him credit. He's hitting, what, .375 or something since mid or late June. So he's doing a fine job offensively. I'd like to see him mix in a few more doubles and triples. And I really wish he had a better arm in the outfield. But I'll give him his dues. He's hitting well, and you know, maybe it's a sign of better things ahead for him. He was right around .300 last year before he got hurt, and now he's at .311 this year. So I don't know. What else can I say, Bill?
Well, he started out exactly the same way last year, and he ended up where they sat him for a few games, and you know, the rumbling started and this and that, and he ended up hitting .300. And he did exactly the same thing this year. So, You know, and as defensively, I agree with everything you said. And center field is definitely different, you know, being where it is. But we watched Greg Luzinski play left field for many years in Philadelphia, where he covered from him to the line. So,
yeah,
you know, you can make do. You can make do with guys. If they can hit, they can play.
Well, yeah, but see, the thing is, I mean, you mentioned Luzinski. He had Maddox next to him for many of those years and, you know, other guys who could play. When you look to Revere's left or right, depending which way you're going, I mean, you got Dom Brown out there, and he's not a good outfielder. Or Darren Ruff in today's case, he's not a good outfielder. So when you have two or three guys out there who are not great defensively, it's a concern. So that's the problem. If it was just one guy, maybe you can mask it, you know. But,
I agree with you there for sure. I agree with you. One last final question I want to hit you on, and I know you're going to love this. What did you think of David Montgomery's comment that Ruben Amaro Jr. is not on the hot seat?
I heard that, and it was a little surprising. I mean, I thought he was going to be back anyway, but I was kind of wishing they would keep us a little more suspense anyway. Because, I don't know, Amaro, to me, just keeps looking through rose-colored glasses like he's thinking that they're not that far away from competing again. I mean, he sometimes doesn't realize that all these guys are 34, 35, 36 years old. They're not going to suddenly discover the fountain of youth. I don't know. And what really concerns me, Bill, is I don't think he has a great plan. I think it's just, well, we'll see what happens. You know, we'll maybe do this deal, do that deal. But they don't have a plan. And I'm not the first to say this, but at least the Sixers, with what they're doing, they have a plan in place. I don't think the Phillies do. So I was a little discouraged to hear Montgomery say that Amaro's not on the hot seat. So he's got a contract through next year, and it sounds like he's going to be back. And this certainly is going to be a key off season for Ruben Amaro to see what he does to somehow turn things around, even if it's a long-term fix for these Phillies. He's got to start making some moves, got to start making some deals, got to start getting some guys in the minors who can play. So, boy, if I was the owner, I'd say he's definitely on the hot seat.
I would agree with you, and everything you just said there at the end is exactly right, and I don't see him being able to do that or anybody being able to do that in 1 year. So, you know, we are where we are at this point. We can change a few of the pieces, but you're not going to build a farm system, obviously, in a season.
Right. So, yeah, we're looking at 71, 72 wins or whatever this year. And, I mean, realistically, you can't expect him to win anymore yet next year. But then Amaro said something on the radio the other day, like, you know, he can't just make wholesale changes because they'd only win, like, 55 games or whatever. Well, so what? I mean, so what if you have to suffer that way for a couple of years? What's the difference if you're winning 55 games instead of, you know, 71? Do the fans really get excited if you're winning 71 or 72 games? I don't think so. Yeah, maybe you have a better chance of winning a particular game if you're that team rather than the team that's winning 50 to 55. But, I mean, sometimes you got to take a little hit and have a really bad season or two in the bid to get better a couple of years down the road, like the Sixers are doing.
Yeah, and you can sure see a lot of empty seats at Citizens Bank Park these days.
Oh, yeah. I mean, September, it's going to be very quiet out there with kids back at school and everything, and the Phillies out of contention. There's going to be a lot of good seats available.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, we're getting close to the top of the hour, and we have a couple announcements we want to make. First couple are for Philly Press Box Radio. We wanted to announce that next Tuesday night, August the 26th at 7 p.m., we will be on another maiden voyage, partner, and I'm sorry that you're not going to be with us for this, but as we launch our Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable College Football Preview Show. I love college football. I'll be the host, along with national college football expert Terry House and former Penn State offensive tackle Keith Conlon, also known as the Goon. If you remember Keith, he played on the 1994 offensive powerhouse at Penn State that was just phenomenal.
I do. Yep.
We'll be talking Penn State
football. You had given me the invitation. Bill, you gave me the invitation, but I'm going to leave it to the guys who know a lot more about college football to handle it. So it's in good hands with you and those guys. So I wish you the best with that.
Well, we want you to be part of it whenever you can anyway. As always, you know that.
All right.
All right. We'll be talking Penn State football as well as breaking down the Big Ten. We'll take a quick look around at all the conferences, and we will be making our prediction on who will go to the Final Four in the new national championship format. So, as I say, there's nothing like college football, and for our listeners, please join us or pass on to your friends who are college football junkies like we are. Also wanted to remind everybody we'll be broadcasting live with our friends Philly of the South at Bucket's Tavern and Tap in Tampa on Sunday, September 7th at noon, just before the Eagles kick off the season against the Jaguars. Chet, you'll be with me on the phone as well. I'll be there live. I'm really looking forward to it, meeting these crazy Eagles fans down here. Believe it or not, they have 650 members in that fan club down here in Tampa. So it's really going to be something else. It's a nice place down there. They have 42 TVs, and the place is full of green.
Yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun. I'm sure they'll treat you very well down there, Bill, and I'll be here on the phone with you, and we'll have plenty to talk about on opening day of the NFL season, at least as far as the Sunday version. That's always one of my favorite days of the year when the NFL kicks off.
Can't wait. Can't wait. Another reminder of the upcoming signings in the Delaware Valley in the near future. MJR Sports Collectibles will be having Flyers winger Matt Reed at Pro Image in Willow Grove on September the 5th from 7 to 8:30. Darren Sproles is scheduled to be at the Sports Cave on September the 9th from 1:30 to 2:45. Sports Cave is located at 1625 Chestnut Street in the Liberty Mall. Sports Cave also accepts mail orders as well. Although it's a bit further out, Carl's Cards has announced that he will be having John LeClair in his Havertown store and a private signing with the Big E, Eric Lindros, in November. And, Chet, he's announced he's put out his prices for those two signings, and they're pretty darn good for guys of that caliber.
Oh, really? I may have to make a visit.
Yeah, check them out. They all have Facebook pages and websites. It's Carl's Cards, MJR Sports Collectibles, and the Sports Cave. I believe the LeClair is $25 and the Lindros is $45, I believe. They're pretty good prices.
Yep.
So all these guys do a great job of getting guests in, and so support them if you can. Well, Parker, any parting words for the week as Game 3 of the preseason approaches tomorrow?
Well, for the first time this preseason, I get to see the Eagles game live as it happens instead of having to rely on the DVR. I'll be sitting home and getting, like it's preseason for me, I'm going to be getting ready for the regular season as far as a viewer. So I'll be ready. I'll be there in front of the big screen and ready to cheer on the Eagles, and hopefully they'll look good against the Steelers.
You're going to have your game gear on? You're going to be eagled up?
I think I will. What the heck?
Hey, it's the Steelers, right?
And it's the third preseason game. We're going to see the starters for probably 2.5 to 3 quarters. So, yeah, I'm ready.
It'll be good to see. Got to see what that defense can do. All right,
yeah.
We'd like to thank Mary Flanagan, our marketing extraordinaire behind the scenes, as well as our sponsor, www.shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. For Jim Chachesco, this is Bill Furman. Hoping you enjoyed the show, and we'll join Philly Press Box Radio next Wednesday night, August 27th at 7 p.m. to talk all things Philly sports. You can listen to our Facebook page at Philly Press Box Radio or on the Internet at www.blogtalkradio.com/Philly Press Box Radio. High hopes, Philadelphia sports fans.